Let's face it, no one really enjoys failure, but nothing teaches you as well as failure does. Failure really is the best educator in any discipline, especially in dentistry. Of all the clinical educators that I know, the kind of people that I have the most time for are those who are happy and willing to share their failures with us. This next guest we have on today, Dr. Marco Mailino from Siracusa in Sicily. Apparently on his 3-day course on VertiPreps, the last day, like the half day, is just dedicated to all his failures. And I really, really respect that. I try and emulate that. I love sharing, well, I say love is a strong word, but I like to share my failures so we can all learn together. And with Marco, like what he writes on his blog, it's just brilliant. There's a blog he had titled The Imperfect Dentist, and how we need to stop chasing perfection. Perfection should not be the standard. And so it's with great pleasure, as part of Mental Health Month. April is Mental Health Month, and so at least half the episodes will revolve mental health. It's a great way to kick off this theme by exploring this idea of perfectionism in dentistry. Hello, Pratyush Rathi, I'm Jazz Galati, and welcome back to your favorite dental podcast. Before we join Marco to discuss about how it's okay to fail, let me give you the protrusive dental pearl. This time it's a bit of a flashback to COVID times. I had Dr. Barry Alton on. I'm just gonna echo something that he said. It was an interference cast, and he taught me that it is impossible to be depressed and grateful at the same time. Let me say it again. It's impossible to be depressed and grateful at the same time. So based on that, the protrusive pearl I want to share with you as part of Mental Health Month is that every day when you finish work, I would like you to write down or maybe make a mental note of 3 things you are grateful for that day. Even if you have to really, really search hard for it, try to find 3 things. This could be something that went clinically well. This could be something that your colleague did and you're proud of and you're grateful for their contribution. This could even be just the thought of your child being at school and they're safe and they're happy and that makes you feel grateful. This could be the cup of coffee you had and how much you savored that coffee. Actually, savoring is a big part of evidence-based happiness as well. So one thing I'm gonna do on Protrusive Guidance is the day after this episode publishes, I will do that on Protrusive Guidance, our own social network, the home of the nicest and geekiest dentists in the world. If you're not already, head to protrusive.app and sign up today for the community plan. And you'll see the 3 things I was grateful for on the day after I published this episode. Oh, and guys, before we join the main episode, let me update you on how it's going with the whole project of never writing notes again. Remember that episode I did with Kevin Shannon about digital TCO, this product which will use the audio from your consultation to write your notes for you. And I asked you to be involved in an experiment where you pay half price, locked in, and you get an extended trial. And as part of being in on this deal, I want you to give feedback. So we created this space on our app, Protrusive Guidance, called the Digital TCO Feedback Space. Anyone who's on the app, any dentist can join the space. You just have to click join. And we have a little chat and we have a little forum space. And you know what? It's been absolutely amazing. Your feedback has been brilliant. And Kevin's been so responsive. Like, one thing I asked Kevin for was a confidence monitor. Like, what if, like what happened to me? Like, my battery ran out on my road. That's what I've got to dual channel one, by the way. I've got the one that comes with 2 microphones, right? But I didn't realize the battery ran out. And so halfway through, it stopped recording. Now on dental audio notes, which I also use, it's got this like a little waveform. So you know you're recording. So I asked Kevin, look, can we have this confidence monitor on digital TCO? And he added it. And he added so many different things. And also something called the risk bank, which I haven't tried yet. But when you mention certain risks, it kind of populates all the warnings that you desire when you're discussing risks with your patients. So you haven't listened to the episode, go a few back, listen to that episode about how to never write notes again. And it will just blow your mind. I'll just read a few bits of feedback we've had so far. So Dr. Horn said, I'm late to the digital TCO party, but what a party. I used it yesterday and it was amazing. Jazz's Rode microphone setup worked great. And so, by the way, I've done a comparison video of comparing the Yeti versus the Rode and why I picked the Rode, but actually the Yeti works as well. So you may check out that video. It's on your YouTube, it's on the podcast, it's everywhere. Anyway, the setup worked great and it really helped me with the quality of my notes. And then he goes on to ask questions about, actually, it had some confusion about Emax versus Full Gold Crown. And the answer was, Kevin said, actually, you need to set up your templates. So there's a bit of work involved for you. Like, if you really care about having notes that are so seamless and so high quality, but you don't have to type, you just have to finish your checkup, generate, and it loads up all the notes for you. If you have that dream like I do, then you actually need to do a little bit of work. Like, compared to the hours that we're spending every day trying to make sure our notes are awesome, just a little bit of work up front and you'll be able to get home to your children and your spouse sooner.
And the notes will be just absolutely brilliant. So what you need to do is just watch all the videos in the how to use section. So remember, the website is digitaltco.co.uk/protrusive to be in on the offer. The other way to access that, my website was down recently, so but I hope it still works. It's protrusive.co.uk/notes. That will take you to our little secret space where you can get this extended trial. And I'm going to get in and watch the how-to videos. I mean, don't do what I did and just jump straight in. Even though it's still awesome, I still want you to watch the how-to videos. Dedicate an hour just to watch all that. Set up your templates how you want them, and then you never have to write notes again because they auto-magically generate based on conversation between you and the patient. The number one question I'm getting is, how do you speak to the patient about this? Well, what I say to them is I just point to the microphone. Oh, by the way, new technology, by the way. I'm just transcribing everything we're saying. It'll just help to generate the notes. And everyone's been fine. No one said, no, I don't want to be transcribed and whatnot. No, everyone's been fine about it. People are used to like medical dictation and that kind of stuff. So it hasn't been an issue for my patients. Like for me, I refuse to practice without dental audio notes and digital TCO for any type of new patient consultation, any sort of discussion and treatment planning, any of my TMD consults. Like it just makes sure that notes are fantastic. It helps you to level up your game. And I just hate admin, which is why I love digital TCO. So check it out.
Let's now join Marco for this episode and I'll catch you in the outro.
Dr. Marco Maialino, welcome to the Protrusive Dental Podcast. How are you, my friend, in Syracuse? Sicily, how do you say it?
Syracuse is on the east coast of Sicily. And in this moment, we have something like 18 degrees. The weather obviously is always, Sicily is in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea. And we joke sometimes that we are a little bit more North Africa than Italy, than Europe, because we are at the same level of Africa. A part of Tunisia is at the same height of Sicily. So we have the same weather.
Very nice. I'm very jealous because it's here. It's freezing. I'm like recording in my conservatory stroke office. So it's very, very cold. But I'm so excited to come to Italy for my first time in June to learn VertiPreps from you. It's something that I've been doing already for some years now. But I wanted to take it to the next level. And just for disclosure, I wanted to bring you to the UK, to bring your workshop to the UK. But you convinced me that actually I really need to truly experience your course. And I said, okay, let's do it. So the last time I took a group out to learn vertical preparations was with my friend George Andre Cardoso. We went to Porto, and that was my first time in Portugal. And now my first time in Italy is with you, so we're super, super excited about that. But for those people who haven't heard about you, Marco, and haven't seen the wonderful stuff that you put out to the world, tell us about you, the man, the myth, the legend, the dentist.
The first thing that I wanted to start is about the reason because you are coming to Sicily. Because the point is one, the course that I organize in my office here is a course that I run together with my technician. And if you are going to do prosthetic dentistry, vertical preparation, horizontal preparation, we focus too much sometimes on the work that we do just in the dental office, that it is the dental preparation. The problem is that when you're working vertical preparation, just because vertical preparations are some way different from horizontal. So when you're moving to something with a different rationality, with a different workflow, you have more problems. Instead, the horizontal and established workflow, that it is maybe much more clear around the world. But when you will come to, the reason because I want you to come is because you will not do just a course for dentists, but it's a course where you will leave all the workflow from the dental office to the impression, to the communication, to all the parts, to all the mistakes, to all the problems that we create to our technicians and that after are coming back to the office. It's something about the real connection between the dentist and the technician and everything that is happening in the whole workflow. When I'm going around instead, I do several courses around, no? But when I go outside, I have another one in the next month. They ask me always to focus on the dental part, how to do the vertical preparation on teeth. But I have to say that you will learn when you come here in June that this is just, I can say, 30% about what is a successful work. And this is the reason because I love that you are coming here. And after this, that we can organize something in UK, but always with a similar format. Because this is the real key, the connection and the team working with the technician.
My experience so far has definitely echoed this in all realms of dentistry, but especially in vertical preparations where I have been in a situation where I have been introducing the vertical preparation to my technician, and therefore it's been a learning curve for me and the technician, and so many mistakes and one cracked restoration and learning about space protocols. I've done a lot of stuff online with you as well, but now I want to take it to the next level and I'm trying to convince my technician to to come with us, but you know, life happens and sometimes timing is all about the different timing and stuff. But what I really admire about you, Marco, as well as all the great things I've read about your course and stuff, is you're a philosophizer. You know, you and Pasquale are very similar in the sense that, you know, you are great at really, I mean, your clinical dentistry is just fantastic, so many learning points, but the angle that you approach it and the philosophy and the reflection, I really like that element. When you were studying to become a dentist, is your one of your other passions like philosophy and that kind of stuff? How do you become such a reflective person?
It's just me. It's nice that also because I started dentistry and my desire was not to do the dentistry. The day that I got my degree was one of the worst days of my life because I was feeling like a liar, you know? There was all these people clapping. Ah, you're a doctor, also because I got my degree with the best mark possible. That means that it's 1 out of 10 with Lauda. But I was feeling a liar because the day after my degree, I was not able to do anything in the mouth of any kind of any patients. I was really zero about dentistry. So after the degree, I started completely from zero. I started working with my father. At the time, the situation in my office was a crazy one. We were working without appointments, zero appointment. People was coming, in the bus, they were coming to a barber, no? They just were coming, just knocking to the door, saying, I have a big hole in my tooth, I have pain, this night I'm not being able to sleep. And I was finding something like 20 persons behind the door every single day. And so I started in a very tough way. Okay, there was no time for doing excellence, no time for thinking. So I literally started from zero. From this point, because, you know, for being here, I am quite ambitious, no? And I am passionate about what I do. I started doing many courses. And after my first 5, 7, 8 years, also because I was very stubborn about things, and I am still. After the 5, 8 years, I was able to do very good dentistry. But I was realizing that I was able to do this just in some cases, no? Like, I can say, 10, 15, 20% of cases. So I was able to go around because I started lecturing already in 2008. But I was feeling, again, a liar. Because I was going around showing just my best cases. And I was able, because 20% of 1 year of work, there are many cases. But what about the other 80% of cases? And that was, for me, differently from Pasquale. Pasquale has a similar start, but a different behavior. We are similar, but different about many things. But at that point, for me, was the start, because I was feeling that there was something wrong inside myself. Because I was showing one kind of dentistry. But I was aware that I was not able to do that kind of dentistry 100% of the times. So in that period, I started inside myself to grow the need to match both things. Is it possible to develop techniques, protocols, in order to work in a real way in the real world? Everything started from that point. Also, I am almost crazy about books. I read something like 40, 45, even 50 books every year. And I love to read about, you know, Kahneman, about Nassim Taleb. I read all these books and I start and I read these also again. I love all these kind of books about psychology, about cognitive biases. So I started combining the needs that I was finding in my dentistry, the needs of my dental office, because living in the south of Italy is the poor part of Italy. You have to think that in Sicily, we have a rate of unemployment about young people around 40-50%. So try to think the economical situation that we have here. Also, people pay their dentistry without any kind of help from the government. We have nothing like the NHS. Here in Italy, we are exactly like a shop. People have to come, they have to pay from their wallet and nothing more. So everything started when I started connecting my passion, my ambition, my needs, and my love for books. And also with Pasquale, it was some way similar. We started developing many kind of thoughts about this. And this is when, in 2013, with Pasquale at that time, we started thinking about developing a group that was Tomorrow Tooth, about a different format. So everything that was coming from Tomorrow Tooth, it was not something about just a technique, no? But it's a technique that it is coming from an idea. And the idea is to do something that it is as much real as possible in the real world. Because too many times we live in the world of idea, in the idealized world, in the world of perfection. This is the reason because, you know, you go at courses, you go at congresses, and what do you see? You see just perfect cases. You see just amazing cases. You go on Instagram and you find just amazing cases with bouncer, flash, perfect lighting. You see just these kind of things. Also, we have another problem in dentistry because we have a problem related, okay, this is a human bias, and they need to show your best because you want to show to the people the best that you are, okay? It's normal. And the opposite is true. As human, we tend to hide our mistakes, also because nowadays, in general, we have a problem about the culture of mistake. People tend to hide mistakes because they are scared that others will blame them. They are scared about losing maybe their name, you can say, okay? And in medicine, this is even more important because we have a culture that is coming from 2,500 years ago about the dogma that the doctors was always right, we can say. Hippocrates, already 2,500 years ago, was writing that the patient had to trust the physician, no way more. And the reason was that because the physician itself knows that we have ignorance in medicine, but we cannot show our ignorance. We have to show, it was like the Pope that was always right in the period of the religions. The same, we have to show something to people that we are not. And the culture of the mistake in medicine is still at that point. There is an interesting, super interesting books about, if I'm right, Matthew Seed, it is Black Box. Black Box is a book.
Black Box Thinking.
Perfect. We are right. Black Box Thinking is very, you have to read this, but you already did. I say this for people that are following us. In Black Box, it's very interesting because the book starts with a comparison about the culture of the mistake between two different fields, medicine and aviation. The culture of the mistake in aviation is they leave the mistake in a completely different way, hence the black boxes. Why they have black boxes? Because if something happens, the black boxes are two boxes that record everything that it is going to happen on a flight. And when something happens, they have the black boxes in order to see what happened, to see the voices in the cockpit. They know everything about what that mistake was about, because the idea is that they have to learn from the mistake in order not to do this again. In the aviation, they have this culture. And for example, always in that book, you will read that there is a data that it is incredible. At the beginning of the century, so the mortality in US Army pilots, it was something like 40%. 40%. 8 pilots every 14 were dying during training, not in the war, during training. Nowadays, is that there is one accident every millions of flights. And where are we in medicine instead? In medicine, the data that we have is that we are always at the same level. There was an interesting article that it is very famous from the American Institute of Medicine. It was to Harris Science. Do you know this article, I think? I will send
it. To Harris Science, I believe I might have seen it. Yes, it's a lovely title. I think I feel like I might have seen it. But do include it so I can share it with everyone.
I will share. Well, you will find it easily online. This article, to Harris Science, there was an esteem of medical mistakes in U.S. And it was something that in U.S. every year, something like 44,000 and 98,000 people die from medical mistakes. And we have data even in the following year. There is another article of the following year, 2001 or something like that, that it was 120,000, so even more, from 4090 to 120. And there is another article of 2014 that it is, we can say yesterday, that the esteem is something like 400,000, plus all the other complications. This is just the people that it is going to die, 400,000. And this is because, and what is interesting is that if you analyze medical mistakes, most of them are always the same, are very similar. In the field of aviation, they call this kind of mistakes that are always the same signatures, you know, because the pattern of the mistake is always the same. What is the difference? That in the aviation world, they do all the effort that they can in order to recognize the signatures and change the protocol or create something that it is going to protect. In medicine, it's that we have a different culture of mistake and we tend to hide. And this is the same that happens with our techniques. We do techniques that work perfectly in ideal and standardized cases. Like, for example, in restorative, you know? When you go to a restorative course, you see that most of the times we have always two teeth, good crown, easy to put the rubber dam, all the margins are super gingival. The soft tissues are always in a good and healthy conditions. You just see people with a good oral hygiene. But if you go to my office instead, I have to look for these patients. Most of the patients here in Italy are people in their 60s and 70s. Most of the people in my office are not young ones. And in Italy, and I think that this is the same also in UK and in Europe, I think, the population is always getting older and older. So we will experience, everybody, this problem that the people that we are going to treat are older people. And they have problems. They are not able to stay reclined because they have back problem, neck problem. They are not able to stay too much time with their mouth open. They take multiple medications. They are not good about brushing. We have to manage these people, but we never spend enough time talking about the needs of these people and the needs of the dentists working on these kind of people. So
we should be going to these courses and treating root caries and simulating subgingival restorations with inflammation and poor oral hygiene to actually get the real world, which is why I echo everything you said. Everything is about real world and everything is about owning up to that. You know, we do make errors in dentistry. Like recently, I was doing something to warm everyone up to coming to June. I'm doing the VertiPrep for Plonkers series. And one of the webinars, I showed my over tapered lower incisors that I did. And the stupid mistake I made with the wrong angulation of the burr I was holding. And whilst it's embarrassing for me to show it, I show it because we can learn so much. And so if we learn from the aviation industry, if we had a bank of an area where we just uploaded our mistakes constantly and we kept learning from it, which is what I think, you know, I've seen you and also Mashek also be very good at showing mistakes and stuff. I think that is the way we can grow. But we often beat ourselves up a lot about these mistakes. We have this perfectionist culture. Where do you think that stems from? And how have you found it, you know, in terms of a beginning and coming to accept that, okay, we are not perfect? And what advice would you give to a young dentist about the whole stress that we put on ourselves that everything has to be perfect? Because in the real world, just like you said, we have to make compromises.
Yes, okay. The point is that aiming for perfection has several problems. The first one is that we have to do a very good classification of what we are doing. What I mean? It seems simple, but when we work doing what? Because the problem is that we work in order to obtain an outcome. But, and about this, John Cademy wrote amazing things. In medicine, or in dentistry is the same, we have different kinds of outcome. John Cademy says that we have three different kinds of outcome. One is the process-centered outcomes. Process-centered outcomes are result of clinicians, the result of procedures that clinicians perform. So it's something about a technical skill. And we focus too many times on the technical skill. I mean, let's say about a shoulder, no? If to do a perfect shoulder all around is just something that you need a technical skill, but that this technical skill, even if perfectly executed, translates into a clinical outcome, these are two different things together. So the first point is that we have to divide about process-centered outcomes, clinician-centered outcomes, that are signs and findings the technician observes, of signs of treatment efficacy. Like, for example, you're looking to an X-ray, you see that the root canal treatment is correct, and you say that the treatment is perfect. But you know better than me that sometimes there are patients with a good root canal treatment and have discomfort. And even the opposite is true. How many times do you see endodontic treatment at half and the patient is fine? You know, this is...
In my aging population, the silver points and the voids, but how well it's been there for 40 years, same as your patients.
Yes, this is what happens. And the third one is patient-centered outcomes. This is the most interesting one. These are the real outcomes that the patient, that it is the final customer, we can say, of our treatments, really notice and care. The point is that these three outcomes, the process-centered, the clinician-centered, and the patient-centered, are not always working on the same line. In my experience, most of the times, they are working, fighting between each other. So the problem is that when we talk about perfectionism, most of the times, perfectionism is focused on the technical part, so on the first outcome that we were discussing, the process-centered outcome. But many times, there is no translation in the real world with the patient-centered outcome, that it is the things that we should be more interested, because this is what our patients are paying for. The second toxic thing about perfection is another one, that when you see all these protocols, they are focused on standardized and ideal cases. When you are going to do a technique, a protocol, most of the times you have the case developed on ideal and or standardized cases. But the idea is that when you go back to your office, you have not ideal standardized cases. So you don't need a protocol and a technique, but you need to approach, to understand a philosophy of treatment. I don't want to speak about philosophy as something just to speak about, but a real philosophy of treatment. This is the reason because many times and I did this many times, you go to a course, you learn on the models, you learn everything. You think that you will go back to your office and you will do amazing cases. And Monday, the first patient is on your chair and you're not able to apply the technique because the patient is not fitting in the ideal standardized case that you were needing. So we need different things. And this is the aim of my work. My aim is not to give you a protocol, a fixed one. I give you different things like a range of treatment and you can move in this treatment. Mm-hmm. Also in my work, you can move in a smooth way between the restorative work and the prosthetic work. So they are going to merge together in order to give you even more chances in order to solve the problems of your patients.
Hi, it's Jans. Just interfering here with a really important message. As you know, I've been trying to support Sakina. Sakina is a protuberante just like you. And her daughter in Tanzania is just a year old. And she's fighting a battle with a condition called SMA type 1. Now, you've heard me talk about this before, and I've done videos and promotions, and we've almost raised $1 million, which is just absolutely crazy. $1 million US. She's actually just shy by $20,000. So we've raised $980,000. And she needs about 1.7 million to get this therapy. However, once they reach a million, they could start to save her life. They could start to give her this drug and give the rest in installments. So we are almost there. Could you consider donating a little bit more money so we can be proud as a community that we saved the life of one of our own? I'm sure if it was your child, you'd want the same thing. The website to donate is protrusive.co.uk/Nafisa. That's N-A-F-I-S-A, Nafisa. And when you go on there, it's a GoFundMe page. It's in Canadian dollars, but that's just one of their fundraising accounts. That's very internationally friendly. So don't worry, that is the legit one. And that money does go straight to Nafisa. Thanks so much to all of you who've donated. We're almost there. Let's keep going.
Marco, the interesting thing that I've been reflecting on when I was thinking of the questions to ask you today is, when you look at the standards for dentistry, there are certain standards that we must meet, right? So we have like certain colleges that produce guidelines that ideally we should be aiming for this outcome and this outcome. And when we fall short of that standard, it hurts us. It hurts our ego. And we generally care for our patients and we feel bad. When we are making a compromise because the patient can't open their mouth too big or they are not able to look after what we're placing, how do we decide, okay, that in this case, it's okay to make this compromise for that reason? And how can you figure out that, okay, are you just a bad dentist and you're not good enough? Or that actually anyone would have struggled in this case and we need to make peace with the fact that, okay, we can't be perfect in this scenario and we can't be perfect in all scenarios, but how do you convince the young dentist that it's okay to fail? And what sort of guidelines would you give them? Mm-hmm. You're looking at the standards and they're thinking, I'm not meeting this.
Okay, the first point is that we have to understand which kind of standard we are talking about. Because what I see is that most of the people put the standard as what they see in courses and congresses. That kind of anatomy, that kind of aesthetic, the kind of soft tissues, but with the kind of patients and clinical situations. If, for example, I work a lot with old patients. This is my biggest problem. With patients with xerostomia, you know, they have not saliva. These kind of patients have so many decays. They do decays at 360 degrees. They have bilingual class 5. When you are dealing, these are the real patients. Because young patients in my city, most of them are healthy. And unless you are a very famous dentist, and I'm not in that sense, or you're even a very rich city, and I'm not, and there is an high request from healthy patients about veneers, about bleaching, all these kind of things, the people that you are going to treat are people with disease. Sometimes we forget that our patients are people with the disease. And the disease is not just on their teeth. Most of the times, the teeth are just the mirror of a problem of a general health situation. I wrote a book about that. I will give you also because I wrote this in Italian for my patients, but I have the translation in English. And it is about that most of the times, the teeth are just the mirror of what your body is. Because you know, for example, that both decay and crooked teeth are a modern disease. You know this?
Yes. If you look at the skulls from humans years ago, we don't find that as much. Absolutely.
Yes, I've been in the historical museum, of Budapest in Hungary with another dentist, Andras Volom, that it is very passionate about this topic, and I've seen so many skulls, and all of them perfect straight teeth, zero decay. So when we have a patient with decay, it means that there is something wrong about their lifestyle, for example. So it's much more than just filling a tooth. It's understanding what it is not going on. Because the thought is today, but maybe this is a sign of something that may have worse consequences all over the time. So the first point is about...
You say it's a mirror. I just wanted to add on that. You said it's a mirror. I like that term. The other one I've heard of is that the mouth is a window as well. Like you're seeing through and you're seeing the general health of that person, you know,
yes.
The link between dental diseases and cardiac and also Alzheimer's and stuff and oral hygiene. The perio link is
also,
quite spectacular. So I love the mirror, but also like the window as well. Like you're seeing, you know, what you're seeing is the inflamed gum, but you're seeing an unhealthy person attached to it.
Yes, we all know now that there are relations between diabetes, for example, periodontal problems or problems about cardiovascular problems. We know that there are these connections. But the point is, what are the standards? Because the point is also, and what do you ask to your dental practice? Because what I teach, for example, is not to do the case, the perfect case for courses and congresses. In fact, I replaced the word perfectionist in my practice with the word I standard. I daily standard, because what we have to work for in order to improve your life is not to learn a technique for doing the case, is to learn a technique in order to rise your daily standard. If I'm able if you're able after my course, let's say, to have most of your cases on a scale 0 to 10 at 8, but all of your cases are going at 8, for me, you're doing something that it would be very, very beneficial for your life. Instead of doing one case, maybe at 10, and all the other cases at 5, because patients are not matching. So the first point is about which kind of goal we want in our life. Ideal one, real one, the best case, the average case. I am focused on improving the average case, okay? Most of the time also, the difference that we do are something that are not against minimum standards, we can say. For example, I do a lot about bioclear restorations in restorative. And what they do, for example, is a lack of anatomy, okay? But if you look at the X-ray, there is a good septal seal, the composite is well adapted, there is a good adhesion. So the discussion that we are doing, I think, that are more not between us and I can say a lawyer, for example, legal problem, but most of the times are between dentist and dentist. The second thing is that when we realize that we have to make compromises, a compromise is not a real compromise. It's about understanding what is more important. It's about putting priorities. For example, in prosthetic dentistry, here in Italy, for example, the priority is to give a good space to your technician for doing a beautiful crown. This is the first priority of the dentist, especially the dentist that it is specialized in prosthodontics. Okay? Instead, for myself, my priority instead is the biomechanical one. Why I do say biomechanical? Again, it's not just philosophy. It's that preservation of biomechanics, in my experience, is the best parameter that it is connected with the patient-centered outcome. What I saw in my practice is that if you are following a sound biomechanical principle, the outcome that patients will perceive, and so the success of the office, the real office, are very, very connected. So, my endodontics, my restorative, my prosthetic are all in the same philosophy of preservation of the biomechanics. So in my case, for example, always the example of the crown, my aim has always been not to give the right 2 millimeters of space to my technician, but the opposite. How can I give you as less as possible in order to have a decent crown? What I do, unless I work on anteriors, are not super beautiful crowns are decent crowns, but preserving the biomechanics. Because that is my aim, to preserve biomechanics, because it's really connected with the patient-centered outcome. Instead, just to give the space for a crown with a shoulder of 2.5 millimeters, I know that the crown will be beautiful. But that goal, that it is not the patient-centered outcome, but it is clinician-centered outcome, is fighting with the final goal, that it is to expand the lifespan of a tooth. So you see, this may seem small adjustment, but because we do small adjustment in different parts of our workflow, at the end, the result is changing a lot.
That was fantastic. And I totally agree. It's one of the principles that you have taught me before in terms of preservation of the pericervical dentine. And
yes.
It makes you think that, you know, if you're blindly following the rule book or the prosthetic guides, you know, you get the Ivoclar image and it shows exactly how much reduction it needs. But I like your philosophy of what's the least I can give and get away with because it's going to preserve the most tooth structure. Can you give us examples of some early failures you had in your career that you think young dentists are making now, and then how you look at those failures and the viewpoint of how you can raise your daily standard?
Mm-hmm. Okay, first, I have a small spoiler. When I go my 3 days course in Syracuse, the last lecture is the lecture about failures. You will see the most beautiful failures of my life with follow-ups up to 10, 15, 17 years. I have one lecture, this is the last one, about this, because you can learn all the techniques of the world, but if you don't learn how to fail, how to rise and try again, you are not going anywhere at all. Okay, I had failures about anything, I can say. I had failures, okay, and the lessons that I got. I had failures, for example, a lot of failures about adhesion when there is not so much enamel. We have this sort of dogma that adhesion is something almost religious, that adhesion is working always, even on dentine, on sclerotic dentine, is that adhesion is working in some situations, when we have an abundance of enamel, for example. When we have not so much enamel, adhesion is going to fail because there is a load on this kind of interface between the resin, the adhesive, and the tooth that is going to be stressed over time. And there is an aging of this interface with the failure. So, for example, and instead, when I go on social networks, I see so many cases with teeth with almost zero enamel, doing indirect adhesive restoration with all these fancy words like ribbon, fiber, replacement of dentin, bioemulation, something, all these kind of things. Adhesion, when there is not so much enamel, most of the times will fail, especially if you have some lateral forces. Of course, if you have just a vertical one, it not. But in the real world, we are not able to control the forces.
When do you think that failure happens? Because a lot of the data that you see is that, you know, anything that you do will usually 1 or 2 years will be fine. And in your practice, I know that maybe you would have experimented, but you would have followed these principles from courses and tried to do it. And then at what point have you found those cases where you had a doubt, but you did it anyway with lack of enamel because you thought, okay, I'm doing the modern adhesive principles.
Perfect.
When did the problems arise?
Well, in my experience, most of the problems related to aging of adhesion in this kind of situations happen between 4, 5 up to 7, 8 years. 5 to 8, 4 to 7. This is the range that I've experienced. Most of my failures I will show you in Syracuse when you come in the lecture about fails are between, we can say, 4.5, 7. Because if you have not fails in this range, you have not. But because for sure in that patient, there is a vertical load that it is not stressing the adhesion. But if there is a tension of that kind of bond, usually between 4 and 7 years, there is a degradation of the adhesion of dentin and the degradation of the adhesive interface leading to the failure. Sometimes the failure is the simple decementation of the post, of the restoration. Sometimes instead there is a partial decementation and you have a new decay. For example, I had a decay when I was doing, for example, deep margin elevation, putting just the deep margin elevation on dentin, and after I was doing the indirect adhesive restoration. And I had decay under the deep margin elevation after always 4 or 5 years. I have several cases about this. This is the reason because I stopped doing that kind of technique. About crowns, we love zirconia because it's white. But with zirconia, because of the process, because we mill from the block, there are several drawbacks about zirconia. Do you know that with zirconia, the rate of decementation is up to 8 times more than PFM, for example?
Yes, and what I read was the reason for this, because it's so strong that something has to give, and it's the cement that takes load. Is that the kind of reason for it?
Not just this, but also that the internal gap of zirconia is much more. The metal, when you do PFM, you do this with a lost wax technique. And the match that is between, let's say, the abutment, even if we have a sharp area, and the crown is very precise. When we do zirconia, the milling machine with the burr is not able to reproduce sharp angles because we have a burr that has to move, and the burr is with a round burr, and also you need some freedom. What happens, I will show you, is that if you have some sharp areas that are smaller than the burr itself, you have void in this area. The crown is something like this. This means, and we have data about this, this means that with zirconia, we have the internal gap that we have between the tooth and the crown is way more than with metal. And this is the problem about the cementation. The problem is that we don't spend enough time. I use zirconia, of course. But if you recognize the problem that zirconia has, you can work about, okay, how can we solve this problem? The same I see is happening with the scanners, no? With the intraoral scanner. There is so much enthusiasm also because we are pushed by the brands, by the companies. I work with the scanner. I have behind me. Here is my scanner, you see? Mm-hmm. I use my scanner.
Which one do you use,
Medit? I have the iMedit, yes, a very simple one. But the problem is that intraoral scanning has several problems. Of course, several problems that are not present in every single case that you're doing. But you have to recognize where that technique is fitting in the workflow and where instead is better to move the conventional impression. Instead, we are moving, the word scientism. Scientism is not science. Scientism is an exaggerated trust in the ability of the science to discover the truth. We are doing the same in dentistry with the digital dentistry. We have the digitalism. Okay, we have another word today. From scientism in dentistry, we have the digitalism. And it is the exaggerated trust that working with digital devices will get a better outcome. This is absolutely not true. In many cases, working with the digital dentistry, we have an outcome maybe is quicker. And this is another point that we have to address. But sometimes the result is worse than we were doing in the past.
What percentage of your vertical cases, let's talk vertical, for example, where we are trying to capture subgingival and the light will often not reach where you want it to go. There's different ways to manage it, but I just want to know from you, what percentage of those times are you scanning, be it delayed or be it immediate? And what percentage of those times are you impressing for those type of restorations?
Okay, in this moment, I'm scanning just very easy cases in patients with the low caries profile. So for example, if I have a patient, an F patient, I want all the margins to be subgingival. So I'm scanning cases where I can afford the limitations of the scanner, like the shallow reading of the sulcus, like also, teeth without discomy, teeth without problems of ferrule, because if I want ferrule, I want to engage as much subgingival. I do easy cases with the scanner. But when I'm moving to old patients with xerostomia, or patients with a high caries risk, or compromise the teeth, I'm doing again the hybrid workflow, doing the conventional impression, and after I scan the impression with the procedure that we'll see is the double scan procedure in order to have the best information about the case, and after we move to milling zirconia. It would be a very long topic.
Yeah, it's good to get like a general overview because it's nice for someone like you who's already embraced digital, but I appreciate that. One of the things that when I look at my own work, and I'm going to be critical of my own work here, is that I went from doing 100% analog to almost 100% digital, and that's not right. You know, I can't now rely on digital for every way and accept those compromises. Where we can identify a compromise and where we can correct it using more traditional techniques, I think we need to know that there are some times that you'll deviate away, and that's what I like about your protocol, is that, okay, every case is unique, and sometimes you'll impress and sometimes you'll scan, and that depends on the patient profile, but more than anything, actually.
Yes, the point is always one. And we don't talk enough about the limitations of digital dentistry. Nobody's talking about all the problems that zirconia has in comparison to PFM or pressed, for example, work with the lost wax technique, because we have also pressed this silicate, for example, that it is a great material. But we don't spend enough time talking in general. This is the point. We don't spend enough time talking about problems. And instead, it is when you start talking about problems in a good way that you start finding solutions. And you start also creating a new higher standard in your practice. Instead, sometimes we just follow guidelines in a blind way, especially today that we have specialization. Specialization is another big topic because nowadays, because there are so many specializations, we have the endodontist, we have the prosthodontist, we have the surgeon. Each one is focused on its own. But the problem is that most of the time is focused on the technical part. So we have the endodontist, for example, that it is so focused on managing maybe the apex, and they say that there is a cure is going to open much more the back chamber because his focus is to be able to arrive with his good aperture to the apex. After the case is done, technically speaking, it was perfect. And he's going to the prosthodontist. The prosthodontist instead is not looking at the access, but is focused on giving the right space to the technician. So each one is focused on its own. And I don't know who is going to be blamed, if we can say, for the failure when we have the fracture of this tooth. Because the problem also is the follow-up. I am a general dentist. I do everything in my office. In the past, I was also doing orthodontics, just to say. If you are the only one in your office, of course, you have many limitations, because of course, you will find the surgeons that are better than me, you will find implantologists better than me, endodontists better than me, no way. But I have one good advantage. When I see patients and they have a failure, I have nobody to blame, because I am the only one. So if I have a patient with a fracture, I was the endodontist, I was the prosthodontist, and I was also checking the technician and accepting the work and doing the cementation. So I have to understand that the problem was in me. Instead, when you're going to different specializations, the problem sometimes is that the responsibility is shared between so many people that nobody feels the one doing the bad thing. So this is another point. And with the specialization, it's even more important to have a driving principle that for me is biomechanics. When I speak with people working that way, I think that to be able to highlight one driving principles that in my practice is highly connected to the real outcome of expanding the lifespan of the tooth, I think that it is the most important part. Because at least if we have one principle where all the people specialized agree, it's already a good starting point. And it is also part of the course that we will do, the principle, the why.
The principle is my why, and is why I introduced vertical preparations into my practice. I could have just stuck with horizontals, but I challenged myself to learn something new, because the whole principle of biomechanics that you speak of is exactly the reason, because there's a greater why for longevity as our best outcome. My final question, Marco, is what advice could you give to the young dentist, a bit like you when you were many years ago, you qualified and you felt like you weren't able to do the dentistry. And what's happening is they're putting the matrix band on, and every time they're seeing that they're not getting the right seal because there's bleeding, and they're feeling like a living a lie, or they're feeling like they're constantly at every stage, they feel like they're picking the wrong wedge, or when they're taking extraction, they're taking too long, things are breaking. When things aren't going right, what advice would you give to young dentists to help them get back on track, get their confidence back up, and get them to doing the kind of dentistry where the day flows better? What's your top tip to that dentist?
There is no tip, because you know the problem is always the culture where we live. Today we live in the culture of fast and furious. And this is true also about teaching something. People think that they go to a course. I see this even on some dentists here, friends of mine. They go to a course and they think that by a week, they are already expert in that thing. There is a learning curve that it is, you cannot skip the learning curve. You cannot skip the mistakes. There is something, I can teach you everything. When you come to my course, I will say you everything. I'm not kidding nothing for myself. But despite this, of this, I know that you have to do mistakes. And this is the reason because the last lecture is about failures. Because after discussing 3 days about all the details of vertical preparation, I have to prepare you for doing your mistakes and to grow from your mistakes. The problem is that nowadays we have this culture of fast and furious. Everything is quick. That we have, everything is ready, you know? Instead, this is not going to work because we are humans. And this is another bias that we have, that because of all this technology, all these things, smartphones are faster, meaning machines are faster, but we humans are always the same since thousands of years. Most of the problems that we have as humans nowadays is because we have changed our environment so much and we have changed so little in the last thousand of years that these two things are not matching together. This is true about everything. There was a very nice sentence about this on the book of another Indian. It was the Almanac of Nadir Alicant, if I'm right.
Oh, one of my favorite books of last year. I absolutely loved it. Great book.
Yes. And there was a sentence that I have printed here in my mind that it was, if you have problems about old things, don't look to this century about the solutions. Because older is the problem, older is the solution. If you have a problem about something that has been created in the last 10 years, the solution probably would be a modern one. So when we talk about training, relation, learning, there is nothing that we can accelerate. We are not computers, but we have simply to be honest about all the pain and all the struggles that we have in our learning. You know that there is also another nice part that is also another tip, is that the Dunning-Kruger curve, you know?
Dunning-Kruger effect.
Yes, absolutely. There is another bias that we have to acknowledge. And if you acknowledge this at the beginning of your career, it's even better because you live things in a better way. And it is that when you start, your confidence will be much more than your real skill. And the first part of all the people, all the experts, is that your confidence will start to decrease. And your skill, instead, will start to grow. So there is a sort of letter like this, like an X. And if you understand this as soon as possible in your career, it's okay. Because when you feel that you start to accumulate mistakes and your confidence is going down, you usually get depressed. Instead, this is the normal curve of every person that it is training to learn a technique. But the problem is that when you learn to play golf, to do a wrong shot is perfectly fine. But in dentist, instead, because we have a different, like in medicine, a different culture of the mistake, we blame ourselves. The problem is the mindset that we have in medicine.
It reminds me of a case. I was 1 year out of dental school and I saw this upper left second molar with an amalgam that had a ledge. We see it all the time, right? A ledge, the amalgam was slipping under the matrix and you on the radiograph see a ledge.
Typical.
And 1 year qualified, I said to the patient, okay, not having any pain issues, that's fine, but there's a ledge here. It's not going to be good for your gums. So I tried to correct it. Small mouth. I didn't appreciate it. So much bleeding. So it was a difficult patient. And then by the end of the restoration, I don't even know if I improved the scenario with my composite. It probably made it worse. But it made me realize that, wow, there's a reason why the previous dentist struggled. We can't just look at something and say, oh, this is bad dentistry. There's often a reason why a dentist struggled. And I think that's that was a real big learning point for me. And based on everything that you said, I think the main lesson we can draw away from this is to fail, especially in our first few years, is a part of it, and we can't shortcut, we can't skip all those failures. Those failures, as long as we learn from them and we keep improving every day a little bit and reflecting, taking photos and thinking, what could I do differently to fail better every time? And there are certain, there's only a few mistakes which, okay, we need to bring this patient back and redo it. Most things are, okay, this is slightly below ideal, but it was still better than leaving the caries as it was. It's still some material there. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? I think a lot of times they're very harsh, but we need to go through that pain process.
There is another point that is interesting. It is that when we are younger, we in the doubt, we always do something and we do mistakes. When you are like now, no? We are older, we can say, you know when to do something, but you know even better when not to do something and to do wait and see. Sometimes most of the problems, you are looking for the problems because you jump in all the cases, like you did. When I see an upper second molar and recognize that the patient is not a good one, I do nothing. Because I know that I'm not the one, I'm not Jesus doing miracle. I leave the miracles to the others.
It's the experience, but yes. It's the wisdom that you gain from your failures. And the true sort of skill of the clinician is picking your battles. And as a GDP, they're also realizing that a generalist, we should cherry pick and choose, because already it's such a difficult job, so we should cherry pick. But I'm just conscious of the time. And Marco, I am so excited to see your failures lecture, especially, I know you've got so many, with respect, I know you've got so many great ones to share in the sense of how much you've documented all these years and what we can learn from that, right? That's going to be golden. Yeah. So I can't wait to bring a cohort of a protrusorati to you in Sicily. I will put your website and everything in the show notes, because not everyone can come in that June, and I want them to know what other dates you have. So I will put that. But what's the best way to learn from you? What's your website so we can just find out about what else you have on offer for us?
Okay, in this moment, there is my website. That it is educational.studiomaiolino.net. And on this website, you have the BioVR course, you have the vertical course, and you have also the vertical lab course. There is a course also for technicians. Because most of the problems, this is the reason because my course here is with the technician. Because most of the problems that I had people in the past following my courses was not on the doctor part. Because you will see that vertical preparations, once you understood a few things, is quite easy. And there are just 4 or 5 critical points. But the problem was in the communication and in the transition of the work to the lab and coming back. This is the point where most of the people were experiencing problems. So this is the reason because on my website, you will find also the vertical lab video course. The video course is something
put
like...
put that in the show notes and everything.
Yes, it's something like 12 hours, like 9 hours, my part, and three and a half hours is the part of the technician. And I did nothing, of course. Of course, when you come to the real course, there are some things that I have to show, like when you move your wrist, when you move your bar. There are things that I'm not able to, explaining is not working. It's like I try to explain you, for example, how beautiful is a woman describing the group feature of her lips. You have to see. Yes, you have to see. Yes.
What a great way to end the podcast.
Okay.
I love it. Okay. Marco, thank you so much, my friend. I can't wait to come. He's following your work for so many years. I'm like a little fanboy, so I can't wait to actually meet you in June. We'll keep in touch, my friend. And thanks for this philosophical episode.
Okay, we did something different this time.
We did. Thank you so much.
Well, there we have it, guys. Thank you so much for listening and watching all the way to the end. If you enjoyed Marco's humility, please do give it a thumbs up or a subscribe wherever you're listening or watching from. Of course, if you're on Protrusive Guidance, you get to answer a few questions and get some CPD. So why not? You've done the hard work already of listening all the way to the end. Any of the paid plans on Protrusive Guidance will make you eligible to get a CPD or CE certificate. For those who are messaging about the trip to Sicily, we've been sold out for ages. So there's about 8 or 9 of us going. I'm super excited for that in June. So I'll kind of document that for you guys. I'm very excited to see Marco in person. But otherwise, I look forward to engaging and speaking to you all on Protrusive Guidance. And I'll catch you same time, same place next week. Bye for now.